The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we are back from the weekend into a Monday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm not jet-lagged at all. The daylight saving time change did not affect me at all.
Oh, were we supposed to change the clocks this weekend? Oh, no.
Man, I'm just...
Oh, no. Yeah, for whatever reason, it didn't affect me this time.
But my cold's gone.
Yeah.
So that's good.
That makes one of us.
And you got me you got me a nice soda pop here.
Yeah, I had to try this thing. I saw it on a billboard. I'm like, I haven't seen that in stores yet. It's the Coke Zero Orange Vanilla flavored. I took a sip, and the jury's still out.
Okay.
You have to tell me.
Well, okay. Well, I'm going
to you need to pour it over. You need to chill it and pour it over ice, right?
Yes.
That's how I prefer.
Yes. Yeah. I have a very critical palate when it comes to soft drinks.
Right. Yeah.
And the only thing I really drink is, and I don't drink soft drinks often, but it's just the regular Coke Zero because it tastes like regular Coke.
Right.
But I can't have the sugar. So when you brought in the orange vanilla, now vanilla's like cream soda, right?
Yeah, that's what it is.
So I'm really interested in tasting it, but I may not do it. I may do it when I go home tomorrow because I'm drinking coffee right now.
And right, yeah. It doesn't fit in, but I had to grab it because I saw it.
Well, thank you very much.
After seeing it on the billboard, and I thought, okay, Gary drinks Coke Zero.
Yes.
And I grabbed one for myself, but I'm going to have to chill it. I like my sodas chilled first and then poured over ice.
Yes. And I will say, though, when I was in the alcohol section, I think it was last summer, and I saw the hard root beer.
Oh, yeah, that stuff. Yeah, right.
I did think about it.
Yeah.
I didn't buy it, but I thought about it.
Right.
I mean, in my mind, I went, oh.
Now, here's
to
what
get
I
drunk
don't...
off of root beer.
Right.
That'd
now,
be interesting.
I mean, it's a malt liquor, and I know that a lot of the, like the wine coolers, for those under the age of 80, a wine cooler was... Those were really sweet. I mean, those you could tell they were, you know, sweet on the palate. So I'm guessing these hard sodas, because I saw a hard grape soda.
Yes, I've seen that too, like a grape knee high.
Right. Yeah. Now they would ask only because they're very polite and they know they have to ask anyway. But if I had some of those in my fridge, you know, I guess my first concern was my granddaughters. Hey, can we have a grape soda? No. No, you cannot.
That would be a problem.
Yeah.
I did try some of the flavored beer, and they've been sitting in my refrigerator. I had one or two of them for like a year.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of flavors? I mean, I know the lime stuff, but...
It was an off of watermelon, because I do like the watermelon beer, but I tried the only thing I could find in Texas, and it wasn't the same. I had one. Mm-hmm. There's five still sitting in there, and the other one was a raspberry beer.
Okay. All right.
And the guy told me, he said, if you're looking for watermelon, you'll love this.
Mm.
And it was okay when you feel like having a sweet beer.
Yeah.
And that happened when I was in the store that day.
Right.
And it hasn't happened since that day that I was in the store.
Yeah.
Which would have been probably last April or May when it started getting a little bit warmer. And I said, well, maybe it's time to buy a sweet beer that I can sit and enjoy a couple outside on the deck, and I never have.
I mean, it's a blue moon in terms of, you know, craving a beer. And it's, you know, we're getting back into those warmer months.
Yeah.
At least we are down here. And you start, you know, in the summer, you start having cookouts or whatever. And on the weekend, it might, you know, be great to have one. I don't drink a lot of it, though, so it sits for a long time in the fridge.
The only time I really like having a beer, to be honest with you, is when I'm cooking chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And I have those ice mugs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The real thick ice mugs. Mm-hmm. And you put in there and you eat. I don't know why, but that's the only time I'm not really a beer drinker. So, and when I am, like I said, it's I look for the flavored stuff, and then I try it once and sits in the refrigerator for a year.
Now, in Texas, and I'm guessing other parts of the South, maybe, I don't know, but years ago, somebody came up with the idea of something called a red draw. And that is about a third of a container, whatever, you know, your mug is, of tomato juice. And then you mix the beer in. It's one of the most refreshing drinks you'll have. So you just pour the beer into the tomato juice. And, you know, you can add salt and pepper, seasoned salt if you want, kind of thing. So it almost becomes like a Bloody Mary. In fact, some people will use Bloody Mary mix and make a red draw. Some people call it a red beer.
I think I told you, because I'd seen it in the store, because I don't mind the Bud Light Lime.
Right.
That's it's okay, especially in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
I want a beer, Bud Light Lime, it fits really. And then they had the Bud Light Orange, and I went, no way.
Mm.
Orange.
Nah.
And this is after that company, what is it, the Snickerdoodle, whatever they are, came up with from Wisconsin, came up with the lemonade beer.
Yeah, right.
And I had
right,
one of those,
right,
and they're terrible.
Yeah, the lemon shanty.
Yeah, right. It's not Snickerdoodle, but it's something. Like
yeah, totally. It's not my thing.
Fluffernutter.
Yeah.
And I was on the golf course, and this goes back about 6 months ago, and I said, yeah, Bud Light Lime, we don't have any, but we have an orange. So the Bud Light Orange. I said, give me one. It's really good. Now it was about 105 out, and I'm golfing, so
yeah. Now Blue Moon, the beer, they actually. From what I'm told, they actually deliver, or when they first came out, they would deliver small bags of oranges to the bars where they were, you know, trying to get business stirred up, and they would instruct the bartenders, here's how you make it. You pour it into the glass, and of course you dress it with a half of an orange slice on the side of the glass. Again, that's not my thing, but they kind of captured that whole thing with orange, and then you squeeze the orange in your beer.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah,
I can.
Lime makes sense to me only because it's you know, kind of the margarita thing, and margaritas and beer kind of go hand in hand at especially Southwest restaurants. That
see
kind of
now
thing.
Now you just changed my taste buds to something completely different when you talked about taking the lemon and squeezing it. Now I want a fish fry.
Yeah,
it's Lent. I want a fish fry.
Right.
I want a really, really good fish fry, and I want the lemon. Thing is, though, even when I've fish fried down here, there's a couple of places, they always forget the rye bread. You got to have the rye bread and the butter. Right? Anybody in the North?
Mm.
If you're going to have a fish fry, you got to have the rye bread.
Yeah.
And
that wasn't a Southern thing. Here,
I know.
It was more of catfish, and with catfish, you have hush puppies.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah. I've had that. That's okay.
Right,
I
mean, right.
That's,
yeah.
I've had whenever I have this one place I go to, I always have their baked salmon, and they have the hush puppies with that, and that's okay. But
we'll do with trout when we eat fresh trout. We'll do sometimes we'll do cornbread muffins, which are akin to the.
Welcome to Red Eye Radio, the eating and drinking show.
Food and drink for 5 hours.
Well, you know, what put me in the mood to talk about it was when I woke up. Because I woke up early, and so I was able to watch the latest Bar Rescue. So,
oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, Taffer's still screaming. I mean,
yeah,
these people are still complete idiots.
Well, here's what I'm wondering. We got to get him back on. I got to ask him, is it getting worse? It has to, it has to be getting worse. You know what I mean? I mean, first of all, he doesn't necessarily want to, and his producers don't want to really solve the problem of idiots trying to, you know, make a restaurant work, because that's the bread and butter of the show. But it has to be getting worse.
Well, the show's been on, what, 4 years now? 5 years?
Oh, easy, yeah.
Because we were in the old studios when we interviewed him the last time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's 3 years, right?
Yeah, four years. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I was, you know what's getting me is the fact that the bar owner knows they put the cameras in.
Mm-hmm.
And they know the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that what Taffer looks for at the beginning of the show is you put the the cameras with the microphones in there, and you see them acting like idiots.
Right.
So you would think that if you really want your bar redone by John Taffer, which is a free Let's be honest with you. It's probably
it's a prize.
It's a quarter of $1 million, right?
Yeah, somewhere in that area.
Probably
yeah.
at the average where they redo your entire bar.
Yeah.
That if you are really going bankrupt, and this would be the other question I would ask him. So they're all going bankrupt. The one today I saw, I think, was well, I watched a couple of them yesterday afternoon when the basketball ended.
Right.
And it was like one was $300,000 in debt, the other $800,000 in debt. And they put the cameras in, and we look at them, and they're acting like complete idiots. You would think. I mean, I would if my bar was having problems, and John Taffer, they called, and I wrote a letter, and they said, yeah, we're going to come down. In that time between when they sent me the letter and we're going to put cameras in, I mean, I would clean the entire bar. If it was filthy, I'd clean it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you do it? And I'd right. make sure my employers were acting properly, and I wouldn't be drinking. But then again, there wouldn't be a show.
Yeah, I mean, if they could solve all of that, if people actually use their brain, I don't know what drives people. Because we asked Taffer when he was on one time, we said, you know, we're talking in one case, it was close to $1 million in debt. Now, as a you know, mom and pop restaurant, that means that's your debt. You know, I mean, I know you can file bankruptcy and everything, but we asked him, do people just see that as numbers on paper? Do they not take their debt seriously? And his answer was no, they don't. They clearly don't. I can't imagine. You know, over the years, my wife and I have had, I don't know how many opportunities where people say, hey, if you want to get in, you want to get in, and we'll, you know, assess the risk. And sometimes we do, and sometimes we look at it and go, no, because ultimately here's what this could lead to.
Well, you and I talked about this once, that when you see some of the scenarios. Well, yeah, when I came in, we were pulling in $80,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm losing $8,000 a month.
Right.
And how long have you been losing $8,000 a month for? Oh, the last 3.5 years.
Yeah, right.
And you and I looked at each other whenever we see that. We go, well, wait a minute. If we were pulling in $80,000, or let's make it an easy number, $50,000 a month at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it went down to $40,000.
Yeah.
There'd be hell to...
I'm freaking out at that point.
Right, we're freaking out. Yeah. We never get to losing money.
Mm-hmm.
It would be when the profit margin starts going down a little bit. We go, okay, what are we doing wrong? What do we got to improve? What's up here? You know, what's the demographics? What are the other... What's the competition around us? We'd be analyzing it. And I think most people would be analyzing it at that point. You wouldn't sit there and say, oh, okay, I'm making $50,000 a month here on this bar. Now it's down to $40,000. Oh, no problem. Now it's down to $30,000. No problem. Now it's down to zero. Now I'm losing $1,000 a month. Oh, well, we'd be going crazy.
No, I would lose my mind because I would get into it expecting to improve on that 50. And if it's the moment it started going the other direction
right.
and trended that other direction and never went back, I'd be freaking out.
Right. You'd say, yeah. Okay, something's wrong. But mm-hmm. to get to the point of losing money over a period of probably 2 or 3 years, you'd never get to that point. I'd close it down before it happened. It'd be okay. Something would have to be redone. Sell right. it, do whatever.
Right.
But if you find out you can't compete at that point, but to take those losses for that amount of time just is almost just incredible stubbornness.
Well, I mean, I would pay a great deal of money if it were a good business to begin with, and that started happening, I'd pay Taffer a great deal of money to come in and fix it.
Yeah, exactly right. At that point, you say, yeah.
I would say, hey, help me find where we're bleeding cash.
Right. What's the science here?
Right.
What's the science that I'm missing?
Right. And sometimes it happens where the demographics change in a neighborhood, where you have a neighborhood where people are moving out or it's growing older or whatever it may be, and the customer base in that neighborhood, in that area, is changing. The traffic is changing. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's, in fact, right here, just a few blocks from our studio, massive expansion of an interstate, and that has changed a lot of the businesses in this area that have been here for a long time, actually. I've talked to a few of them over the last 2 to 3 years, and they said it's a significant impact because the traffic changes.
Right.
And so there are a number of things that can change in a business, but it wouldn't matter. The numbers would tell me something's changing, and I'd have to find out what.
We got a great show.
We do.
We'll tell you what coming up next. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up here, the jobs report. Not good for February, but maybe not surprising. Not that we take a lot out of 1 month. But we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. Ocasio-Cortez in Texas at South by Southwest, and Bill Nye, the annoying guy, also showed up and was with her, and she gets it.
She gets it.
I'm just.
What does she get, Bill?
I don't know. You and I predicted this, and we advised Trump to do this, and he is. Trump to request $8.6 billion for a wall in the 2020 budget.
Don't let up.
Starting it now.
Yep.
Representative Omar goes after Obama. So, I love how she denied it. And here's the tape. And as the reporter said, you've heard the tape. Here's the tape. She said what she said. And that included the implication that Obama is a murderer because he used drones.
Right.
So, Democrats, is Obama a murderer or is he not?
Well, we already know he contributed greatly to the killing of the planet. Remember, he was responsible. He claims he's responsible for the growth in oil production.
That's true.
During his administration, he was single-handedly responsible.
Well, how come there's been no criticism of what she said about Obama from the Democrats' side?
Nothing.
Outrage. How dare you say that about Obama?
Where's Ocasio-Cortez calling him out for admitting that he was responsible for the growth in oil production?
No. I mean, where are the Democrats defending him?
Oh, no.
That's what I'm... Where are the Democrats defending
there's
Obama?
No one... Well, aside from Michelle, who's going to do that these days?
The best or worst story ever. It's really just pure greatness. The top Democrat, a top Democrat, says the Democrat Judiciary Chairman will end up referring Michael Cohen for a perjury investigation. I mean, this is just absolutely precious. I mean, it's just, you can't. And then after he appeared again last week, remember during closed doors, oh, wow, how much great has been accomplished by it. And you and I said, yeah, but the Republicans are going for the criminal referral.
Right.
Democrats might do the same thing. And there it comes out over the weekend. Democrats, the top Democrat says, yeah, don't be surprised if the top Democrat in the Judiciary Committee, that's Representative Elijah Cumming, goes after him for perjury also. Great first witness, Democrats.
Yep.
More than half of California said they would move if they could. Well, then why don't you just vote differently?
Right. Why not? I mean, you voted the same way time and time again.
I mean, I know some of you may be big conservative, but half of California, if it was half of California, you'd be winning. There'd be more Republicans in office.
Right. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Daylight saving time is here, a sure sign winter is on the wane. Also in Dallas, Texas, the average date of the last freeze is March 12th. But you look at Chicago, the average date of the last freeze there, April 25th. Between those 2 points, a wide area of the country. So we've got a ways to go, but we're just over a week away from the March equinox. The 20th of the month, next Wednesday, the first day of spring. Areas for showers today include central Texas and southern Oklahoma. Showers are possible along the Gulf states from New Orleans today, up into just south of Atlanta and on into the Carolinas, then offshore. A good portion of the mid-Atlantic and Midwest will be clear. After some heavy snowfall over the weekend in the northern plains, things at least will be sunny there, as well as clear skies for the Pacific Northwest. Heavy rain for the desert southwest beginning tomorrow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Exposing BS Nightly. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome, and good morning. So happy that you are here with us. Don't even know what are those days again. I don't even know where to start because there's just so many things going on. But let's start with good news first, okay?
All right, what do we got?
America is set to overtake Saudi Arabia and become the world's largest exporter of oil for the first time in 60 years. Good news.
Yep.
Let's do good, worthy talk show of good news.
Yep. And we're doomed.
Experts predict U.S. oil exportation will exceed Saudi Arabia by the end of this year. The U.S. has never before overtaken Saudi Arabia since they began exporting oil in the 1950s. It is a shale boom. Also, Congress lifted the 40-year oil export ban in 2015, and the demand for U.S. crude has continued to surge ever since. The U.S. is now pumping more oil than any other country, we knew that, including Russia. By 2020, the U.S. is predicted to export more energy than it imports for the first time since 1953. We're 1 year away from that.
Wow. That's a big deal. We talked about the wealth expansion and what could be happening and how this serves communities and entire states or even regions. When you look at the production in those regions, that wealth expansion benefits anyone and everyone in that region, because there is always that even indirect effect. When the economy is thriving from, you know, whatever the product is in that region, everyone is going to feel that. So this is a good thing. And it's also a good thing because when we start seeing that, it's hard to roll that back. You can have politicians say, well, we need to go after this, we need to go after that, we need to. But when you understand the damage that is done, and it doesn't matter red or blue, no one wants to truly roll that back. You can talk about the windfall profits tax and all of these things, but they understand when, and it doesn't really take that long, especially these days. I remember in 2008 when it was $147 a barrel in the summer of 2008, you had the majority of Democrats start saying, oh yeah, okay, it's time to drill. Because out in California, they always pay higher prices, but it was astronomical and we had hit that threshold. Now that we've been down significantly lower than that for a long period, there is little tolerance for that kind of increase, especially when it comes from the government, when you're talking about the cost of regulation, which is exactly what you had during the Obama years, and not just with Obama, you had it before.
Well, isn't it interesting that you know, with Ocasio-Cortez out there, who is now the leader of the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
She is the spiritual and anti-intellectual leader of the, can't say intellectual, sorry.
Mm.
She is now the, because that's the, she is the mindset of the Democrat Party, and we are producing more fossil fuels than we ever have before, to record numbers, to the point as we will be net exporter of oil in just a year. There's a potential of becoming totally self-sufficient in 3 years.
Right.
We will be exporting just so many. I don't know what it would be, trillions of cubic feet of natural gas also.
Mm-hmm.
We lead the world in the reduction of global warming gases because of that, because of the natural gas production that comes from the shale and comes from the fracking. And the other major party in this country is calling to stop all of that and go to wind and solar. right. and stop all fossil fuel production.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, we live in the most fascinating times right now. And, you know, I was telling you, I don't know if it was on the air or off the air last week. It really seems strange because the opposition right now, the Democrats, everything that they're proposing, you know, the vote last week on, you know, encouraging illegal immigrants to vote in local elections from Congress, where the majority of Democrats voted on it. Think about any of the major issues we've talked about in the last 2 months where the Democrats aren't absolutely insane in the position that they hold. And by the way, everybody knows it. We get no pushback on that.
No.
And I told you, I think, I don't know if it was on the air or off here, I said, you know, it's really weird because I feel like we're almost promoting conspiracy theories just by recognizing what they're saying.
Yeah, right.
By recognizing what the Democrats are saying, at times I'm taken aback. I'm thinking to myself, well, just so you know, this is, we're just reporting what they're doing. These aren't conspiracy theories that we're reporting. We're not accusing them of doing something that they haven't said that they're going to do. We're simply telling you what they're saying. And I feel still like I'm promoting a conspiracy theory by promoting what the Democrats are saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's the truth. It's what they're saying, and it's what they believe.
Yeah.
And well, on every single major issue of the since the new Congress has come out, the position that they hold is insane.
Well, it is literally counterproductive. It is this idea that because in order to get to where they want to go, as outlined in the Green New Deal, you can't get there without damaging industry across the board.
You can't get
forget about the oil industry.
Oh yeah, just everything.
Any and every industry would have to reduce production greatly as a result of government policy.
And think about it. The more insane her mindset and the more insane her ideas are that she promotes, the more popular she gets inside the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big questions that we had a couple, and I still have a lot of questions, but one of the questions we had a couple of weeks ago was, what does a voting Democrat think? And then CNN brought out those six in that, that commented on her. They all love her. They think she's a genius. Mm-hmm. They think she is the type of intellect that the Democrat Party has needed for the longest time. Now, again, we're not saying that that's all Democrats, but in that focus group, they all loved her and they all voted for Hillary.
Right.
And they just love her. And the ideas that she believes are, number one, impossible, but insane, would absolutely destroy the economy, put, well, billions of people into poverty, because what happens in the United States, the economy would affect everything worldwide. It would put people into horrible poverty. Mm-hmm. It would cause mass starvation worldwide because the United States would not be able to produce the food that we produce right now that we export that feeds so much of the world. And the more childishly insane she becomes, the more popular she is in the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because we've asked for Democrats, and we had one last week that called me. So, wait a minute, I'm still a Democrat, but she hasn't been a Democrat for the longest time. She voted for Reagan. So
right.
She goes, well, I'm a Reagan Democrat. Yeah, but you're not the Democrat that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
A Reagan Democrat today is a Republican. There is no Reagan Democrats left. You may not have left your party, but you left your party.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a loyal Democrat today, you cannot be. I mean, look, Ocasio-Cortez and her comments at South by Southwest over the weekend. By the way, has that stopped being a music festival completely?
Yeah, it's the music is about global warming.
I mean, is everything about global warming down in Austin now? Are only leftist bands invited?
Well, here's the thing, though. That's a perfect example of You can't do anything without being a champion for the cause. Well, you're not going to have anything, any festival about movies and music. It has to be for the cause. Everything has to be centered around the movement. Everything has to be centered around the party. If we get a large crowd that fits within our demographic, we have to use that now as a rally. It can't be about music. It can't be about movies. It has to be about something that brings about the, you know, the masses to move politically further in a certain direction, left. And that's where the party, that's where the party is. You're not going to be able to get away with it in 2020 on the left without getting on board. This is why you had, you know, major players in the party and people running, announcing they were going to run for president and jumping on board the Green New Deal. You got to do it. It's required. Because if you're a Governor Cuomo, if you're Chuck Schumer, Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, you're old school. You're old school.
If you're Obama,
mm-hmm. You're old school.
Think about the shot that Representative Omar took at Obama.
Right. And it's been just over 2 years.
And I didn't see an outrage on social media from the left.
No.
I saw nothing from the left.
Mm-mm. Because how do you do that?
Well, again, what you heard again was, well, you know, people have, she doesn't understand the language. She doesn't understand what she's saying. She does. The only thing the defense of the Democrats is, look, she's an idiot.
Right.
But what she's saying is important and brings up a lot of debate. Except on the Obama thing. On the Obama thing, you've heard nothing. Mm-hmm. And on the Obama thing, if you read what she said, her implication was Obama's a murderer.
Right.
Nothing. The Democrats don't respond.
Right.
Could you imagine if somebody on the right called Obama a murderer? And by the way, we're not.
No.
Him using the drones was totally totally lawful. Under U.S. law, mm-hmm. He's not a murderer, because a murderer is legally that you have done something wrong.
Right.
And so she's wrong on that. But we're, again, that's probably the biggest defense that you have heard, that you haven't heard anybody state about Obama going after Omar.
Mm-hmm. And it is.
But could you imagine if we had said he was a murderer?
But it's impossible to step in. How do you step in if you're on the left and defend it? You can't. It's impossible. It's impossible. You can't come in and discount the Green New Deal. You can't come in like a Tim Ryan and scream about, you know, moving away from identity politics. You can't do any of that. No. Tim Ryan was raging against the machine. Well, the machine's too big. The leftist machine wants no part of you. The days are numbered for the old school left. They're numbered. Schumer can probably survive with no problem. Nancy, in her district, as long as she wants to run, she can serve. But there are others that aren't going to be able to survive that. There's, you know, a Governor Cuomo. I don't know if he were to announce or to run for president. And just think about where Cynthia Nixon took him in those debates. Well, that's nothing compared to what the rest of the stage would do to him in 2020.
Well, you wonder if Cynthia Nixon ran against Cuomo in 2 years.
No, I think there's a case to be made. She could build that following. Not saying we support Cynthia Nixon and her ideas, but she called him out repeatedly because he wasn't far left enough.
I don't think there's any fear of that.
I don't think so. Well, my only concern is that I believe no one in New York, well, the liberals in New York, aren't going to elect anyone named Nixon. anytime soon.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And then Ocasio-Cortez at South by Southwest said, if you don't have a job, you are left to die in America.
You're left to die?
Yes. Hmm. She said that over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to a lot of her presentation. She says nothing. And then when she says nothing, it's like she gets frustrated and throws out stuff like that that's completely and totally not true.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. And thanks to the Wall Street Journal for over the weekend posting this in their notable and quotable section.
Yeah?
The Art of Climate Science. They posted an article from June 29th, 1989.
All right.
From the Associated Press. Are you ready for this?
I don't know.
Associated Press, United Nations. A senior UN environmental official says entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000.
Well, that's coming up. Oh, wait.
Coastal flooding and crop failures would create an exodus of eco-refugees, threatening political chaos, said Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the UN Environmental Program. He said governments have only 10 years to solve the greenhouse effect before it goes beyond human control. As the warming melts polar ice caps, ocean levels will rise by up to 3 feet. Coastal regions will be inundated. 1/6 of Bangladesh could be flooded, displacing 1/4 of its 90 million people. 1/5 of Egypt's arable land in the Nile Delta would be flooded, cutting off its food supply. Shifting climate patterns would bring back 1930s Dust Bowl conditions to Canadian and U.S. wheatlands, while the Soviet Union could reap bumper crops if it adapts its agriculture in time, according to the United Nations. But we only have 10 years as of 1989.
Yeah, well, they keep saying it. Does anybody ever even really listen to that anymore?
Well, as you know, this isn't hard to debate. We are absolutely certain now that we're right, even though we've always been wrong.
Hmm.
We've always been wrong, but now we're right. Hmm. And you, for doubting it and being a denier, is immoral and unethical. Yet we've been wrong every time in our predictions, and scientifically it can be proven that the solutions that we have come up with have done the opposite as intended. And you're wrong.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's this simple. Let's bring her up again. Ocasio-Cortez getting rid of all fossil fuels. The reason that the United States leads the developed Western nations in the reduction of global warming gases, if that's what you believe on the left by the Democrat standards, as we know, because of natural gas, we have reduced our global warming gases more. The nations that have not done that and have gone to wind and solar have not been able to do that. So the solution is get rid of the fossil fuels that have given you the ability to reduce your global warming gases because, well, we never go into that. We just conveniently ignore that.
Well, no, it's the same bogus threat, scare tactic that they've been using, well, at least since 1989. The world is ending. You got 10 years to clean it up.
Yep. I mean, is that a reasonable question to ask for someone out there on the you don't know which way to go? Well, I'm not sure if the Republicans are right or the Democrats are right or the left is right or the conservatives are right. Well, then ask yourself this question. The left has repeatedly over and over again, since I've been in high school, been wrong on their predictions. All of their 10-year predictions, every time they've come out with the 10-year prediction, it's been wrong.
Yeah. So,
and when we look at their solutions that they come up with, scientifically, it can be proven. As we have stated over and over again, it was on ethanol. They finally figured out, oh, from farm to pump, okay, yeah, puts as much or even more global warming gases into the atmosphere. To the point where Al Gore admitted he lied. But he lied about it in order to win your vote. So we know that was the first big push was ethanol. Then it became wind and solar. And what we find out is what has worked so far has been natural gas. And nobody has come up, as again, Ocasio-Cortez comes up with the fact of getting rid of all of it and going on wind and solar alone. We don't know on nuke. They've never been clear on nuke, have they been?
No.
But we're not going to build. We don't have enough nuke plants, so we're going to build 100 more. To replace what we'd lose.
Good luck with building even a few more.
With coal and natural gas. No, we're not. So you would doom this society.
Well, and before you even get to, and we've said this all along, before you even get to the entire goal of reaching that entire goal, just talk about moving in that direction on every item.
Yeah, you can't even get to the first movement on it.
No.
How do you get... When do you say we're going to reduce the power that Americans use by 5%?
Because we're not talking about a public service campaign. We're not talking about encouraging people. We're talking about the government coming in and setting new standards and ultimately outlawing an entire list of certain behaviors.
Right. When's that going to happen? You know, who was it? It was Thomas Sowell last week talked about the fact that... that he can see socialism coming to America. The way they're selling it, yeah, you can see it, but Americans won't like it.
Right.
Because Americans actually don't want socialism. We want free stuffism.
Yes.
But when we're told it will limit our choices and limit our behavior, and then when we find out somebody's going to tell us how to live every little stinking aspect of our lives, then we won't like it, but many of those policies will be implemented, and then people, including Democrats, you'll be pretty ticked off about it when somebody's trying to tell you how to run your life.
And eventually it's going to be a Republican.
Eventually it'll be a Republican telling you how to run your life. Or somebody whose personality you don't like.
Yeah.
And we see how freaked out you are right now over somebody who's president of the United States whose personality you don't like.
Yeah.
So wait till they actually have control of every little stinking aspect of your life.
And through policies that are created by the left.
By the left.
Go ahead and start moving in that direction. Implement. You don't have to get, again, to the entire full measure on any of these before you start seeing the damage and the massive government control of people's lives.
So there you go. I had to read that because when I saw that over the weekend, I went, okay, this is just classic. And it makes the point that we've been making for the longest time.
Right.
This from Fox, everybody covered this, though, over the weekend, but Representative Ilhan Omar's attempt to shame news outlets for misquoting her blistering attack on former President Barack Obama backfired after she released audio of the interview that only served to confirm her remarks. By the way, you want to know how the Democratic Party and Nancy Pelosi enabled her? She actually believes that she can say something, deny it, put out the tape that shows that her denial is a lie, and still she can get away with it because nobody on the Democrat side is going to challenge her.
Nobody's calling her.
Nobody,
except for the trying to make some excuse like she's a child.
Right. The Minnesota Democrat who faced controversy over comments perceived as anti-Semitic got into hot water again after saying Obama's hope and change message was a mirage and slammed the administration's drone and border detention policies. She told Politico that the Obama administration was responsible for the caging of kids at the U.S.-Mexico border, the droning of countries around the world, and that the 44th president operated within fundamentally the same broken framework as his Republican successor. Quote, "We can't only be upset with Trump. His policies are bad, but many of the people who came before him also had really bad policies. They were just more polished than he was." Obama is quoted as saying in the article. Then the quote continues, "And that's not what we should be looking for anymore. We don't want anybody to get away with murder because they are polished." She certainly is not talking about Trump.
No.
Or Bush at that point.
No.
"We want to recognize the actual policies that are behind the pretty face and smile." That is where she called Obama a murderer. Following the article's publication, Omar went on the offense on Twitter and accused the outlet reporter, Tim Alberta, of distorting her words and insisting that she is in fact a fan of Obama. "Exhibit A and how reporters distort words. I'm an Obama fan. I was saying how Obama or how Trump is different from Obama and why we should focus on policy, not politics. That's why I always tape my interview," which is just bizarre. But the move immediately backfired as the recording actually confirmed the comment she made to the news outlet. By Saturday afternoon, she had deleted the tweet.
Wow. Why would you lie when you know the recording is going to
because you feel you're bulletproof, because you know that you can say anything that you want and the Democrat leadership will not. They already a day earlier,
right,
had excused your evil anti-Semitic remarks, so she believes she can do anything. Mm-hmm. She believes there's no accountability. Right. Tim Alberta, the reporter from Politico, "Exhibit A on how politicians use the media as a straw man to avoid owning what they really said. Your tape supports what I wrote 100%. So does my longer tape. It's beyond dispute. Next time, a phone call from your office before the Twitter ambush would be appreciated." That's a reporter from Politico.
So that, and I'm sure the mainstream media is going to have this as their top story, or at least a story somewhere, right?
No.
No one calling her out.
No, nobody's calling her out on that. I mean, she said something, and when she got caught saying it, she lied about it and said she didn't say it and presented the actual audio tape that showed that she said it. And nothing. So have things changed? Where we sat on this show and people would defend Obama day in and day out. Nothing. So is she right? Is Obama a murderer like the rest of them?
He's just a pretty face that got away with murder.
Is he a pretty face that got away with murder? Is there any, should there be any recourse if you're a Democrat for Omar's comments? Crickets.
Nothing.
Total crickets. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. Do you realize how much your truck idles during a year? A truck can go through about a gallon of fuel per hour of idling. Studies have shown that long-haul tractor trailers idle about 1,830 hours a year. That's a lot of fuel use. But drivers know idling is essential to regulate the cab for sleeping. Consider using an auxiliary power unit to increase driver comfort and reduce idle time. Remember that some jurisdictions around the country have regulations that limit trucks' idling time. Fines can reach into the thousands of dollars. Before heading out on your trip, Keep an updated list of state and local idling regulations handy in your cab. There are more than 65 of them right now, and it's challenging to know them all. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Bro.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And it's really important because Omar has become sort of part of the coalition with Rashida Tlaib and Ocasio-Cortez. They really have formed this, direction of where the Democrat Party is going, and in a direction that the leadership of the Democrat Party, and it seems the rank and file voters are falling in behind too, and it really, really, really is incredible. It is a benchmark moment, I believe, when you think about it in political history. You think about any change that has happened that has been accepted by a major political party over the last, I'll say 100 years, and tell me anything that's been more radical. When you sit there and you line up what the Democrat Party now stands for since the new Congress has got in, and the things that they are promoting, the Congress promoting the fact we should encourage more illegal immigrants to vote, and that came up again. How can you be against foreign influence in an election when you want illegal immigrants to vote, which means anybody could come in this country illegally and vote? Putin could send people in just to vote.
Well, it's also it becomes dangerous when you think of the mentality of many rank and file individuals where you've had the man on the street reports where the guy would go up and start asking questions about something. One time it was in a Walmart parking lot. You think Walmart workers should make more than they're making? Yes. All right. We're taking up a collection to give them money. No. Do you think that I should be able to, as a white male, say that I am a black woman? Well, yeah. I mean, nervous laughter. If you think so. The fact of the matter is that when you look at any given movement, and you listen to this, in any of the discussions surrounding it, then especially today, it is that kind of nervous laughter that you'll hear, or people applauding something when in their mind they may be going, I'm sorry, what does that mean? The difference is with a reporter on the street, you get to walk away. Nothing happens to you in your life. There's nothing binding. Except for the video being shown millions of times on the internet, nothing's really going to happen to you. When you start doing it as a part of a political movement, it becomes very dangerous quickly, because you're talking about policies being implemented when many people, and call it willful ignorance or anything else, just simply don't know what they're supporting long term, have no idea what they're supporting. Yay, we're saving the planet. Yeah, give me your keys. Your keys to your car. The government needs your car. You need to walk everywhere you go. You can't remember, can't be horse and buggy. Remember, it was just a few years ago, Gary. No, we need to go back to horse and buggy. No.
Well, when
too
you,
many animals.
But when you bring that up, there's still a fight that's not what's happening,
right?
And the supporters, they are taking sides beyond just being ignorant. They're taking sides and defending something when they don't even know what it is,
right?
And they're denying the things would happen when the only way to implement what she would want to implement is the fact that things would be taken away from you,
right? And still she gets the applause and the support.
I don't remember in a two-month period, because you look at the sanctuary cities that they endorsed the other day, you look at the Green New Deal, which is, in essence, a communist takeover, what it would be. It would take a communist system in order to get to that, which they, you know, which they fully support. The anti-Semitic remarks that have come from Omar and not challenged, and everything else of Ocasio-Cortez, even the things that she said at South by Southwest. But you think of everything that they stand for in the last 2 months, that it is completely opposite of what America is about. And there's a huge number of people in this country that now support it. And the other major party supports it.
Patriarchy, oppression, and injustice. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. Look, I'll be blunt when Ocasio-Cortez talks about the Green New Deal. You want to have an idea of what would happen if it was implemented? Look down south. Reuters, March 10th, Caracas, Venezuela, furious. Venezuelans lined up to buy water and fuel on Sunday as the country endured a fourth day of nationwide blackouts that has left already scarce food rotting in shops, homes suffering for a lack of water, and cell phones without reception. Authorities have managed to provide only patchy access to power since the outage began on Thursday, in which, of course, Maduro calls an act of U.S.-backed espionage. But critics insist it's a result of incompetence and corruption. The government on Sunday suspended school and business activities for the following day without providing any information on a likely time frame for resolving the situation, leaving many fretting that it could extend indefinitely. The country's worst ever power outage comes as Maduro faces hyperinflationary economic collapse and an unprecedented political crisis. Angry residents of the Caracas neighborhood, of one Caracas neighborhood on Sunday set up barricades along a main avenue and side streets to protest the continuing blackout. The food we had in our refrigerators has spoiled. Businesses are closed. There's no communication, not even by cell phone, said one merchant standing in front of a pile of razor wire and debris. We need help. We are in a humanitarian crisis. Lines at fuel stations extended for blocks as drivers stood in line for gasoline and buses waited to fill up with diesel. Families stood under the sun to buy water, which is unavailable for most residents whose homes do not have power. The state oil company said on Sunday that fuel supplies were guaranteed, but only around 100 of the country's 1,800 service stations were operating due to the blackout, according to a gas station industry source. Merchants unable to keep refrigerators working began giving away cheese, vegetables, and meat to clients. Other shops had supplies stolen. One supermarket in southwest Caracas was looted on Sunday evening, triggering a shootout with police and National Guard troops, according to Reuters witnesses and an employee who was present. The looters took food, including pasta, rice, and tomato sauce. A neighboring shop selling home goods such as plastic chairs were also looted. The National Guard rounded up more than 40 people at the scene, tied their hands behind their backs, and ordered them to lie face down on a road that authorities said had been blocked during the confrontation. On Saturday night, a small supermarket in a working-class area of western Caracas was looted after protesters barricaded an avenue and clashed with police. They took food. They broke the display windows. They stole scales and point-of-sale terminals. Said the owner of the store, we weren't here when it happened. We got here and found everything was destroyed. You wonder why this is happening? People who run a socialist society. That's it. There's no reason why Venezuela should be going through this. None at all. Zero.
No. This is all at the hands of Maduro.
Yep.
Every bit of it.
Every bit of it.
Maduro p- putting out the message he believes it's some kind of attack by the U.S.
Exactly.
That's bogus.
Yeah, exactly. Right, that's what's going on here.
The U.S.
Right.
caused all your problems.
Right. You want an example of socialism and what it does? Right there. You want socialism? There it is. Well, no, it's a different type. No, it's not. You have an oil-rich country.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You have a nation that would have, I don't know how many trade partners right now.
Yep.
And you had industry, even GM. Well, that's before the government walked in and confiscated all the property of GM.
Yep.
You had other private sector industry willing to set up shop there in Venezuela.
You want a socialist, you want the reality of socialism? There you've got it.
And the people are powerless. They're starving.
You can't produce oil in an oil-rich nation.
No.
That's socialism.
And it's not going to change until he's gone, until Maduro is out.
Right. And they changed the philosophy.
Right. They're going to have to change
of nationalization.
System. Yep.
Of government controlling the capital. Of government controlling the means of production. Doesn't matter whether it's a dictator. Well, that's because it's not Democrat socialism. Ends up in the same place. History has shown us that.
Well, because you can't get there without the policy.
Nope.
You can't get to the intended goals without the same policy. And policy is law.
And you want an example of what the Green New Deal would do if ever implemented? You got it right there.
Yeah.
That's exactly what would happen. Why? You can't produce power.
No. Nope.
And so what happens? Even in the great state of Texas, Ocasio-Cortez goes down to Austin and gets cheered for promoting an idea that would make the United States like Venezuela, that would destroy the country, and people are cheering.
Yeah.
In Texas, they're cheering.
And you're not going to change again. It's their defense of socialism and trying to draw some kind of distinction between democratic socialism is about as bogus and meaningless as their defense of Ocasio-Cortez. Oh, she's just young. She doesn't know any better.
No.
Or Omar. Oh, well, she doesn't fully understand the weight of her words. That's interesting because you believe Steve King did.
And Trump does, right?
Right.
Trump, there's no miscount. Even if Trump doesn't say something, he's saying it.
Yes. Exactly. We'll go out of our way to make that this, but when she says something, I mean, to the point of when you had Omar just flat out denying she actually said something that was on tape.
But socialism, communism, always promoted, as we've always stated, it's for the worker. It's for the working man. And what does it do? What does it do? What's the concept of it? Government coercing you. Immorally, government coming in and stating, we know what to do with your property better than you do. We know what to do with your money better than you do. We should have all the power and control over you, whether it's a political party or a dictator. It doesn't matter. It's the belief that a monopoly, the immoral belief that a monopoly can control things better than competition, that coercing people, the evil of coercing people and taking people's property from them is a better moral way for a society to be run than a free enterprise society where people do everything voluntarily and they cooperate because it's in their best self-interest. The goodness of that.
Because they always start with, well, the rich don't need. But eventually they have to come to the middle class. Eventually they have to come to everyone and tell you what? We'll give you what you need.
Well, the thing is, who gets, you know, we talked about this the other day. I was saying that, you know, coming to work and, you know, just looking at everything around me when I was coming to work, I think it was Thursday night, Friday morning. And I just went, you know, these, it's the private sector. It's people because of their own self-interest and voluntarily cooperating with others that produces and makes sure that things are done right. And everything that I was looking at, from the vehicle I was driving to the roads I was driving on to all the buildings around, and I was thinking about all the civil engineers, all the architects, all the electricians, all the plumbers, all the road builders, all the people that do something as making sure they mix cement and doing it correctly in order to make sure that it, you know, builds our roads in the proper way. Everything must be done absolutely 100% or as close to 100% as you possibly can get in the private sector. And that's done how? How do you get as close to perfection as you can? People's own self-interest and voluntarily cooperating with other people by writing contracts with them, that's what produces it all. And then I was thinking, I go to do my radio show. And what's my radio show about? My radio show is about government. An entity, a basic monopoly of people put together who believe that since they got a title, they got an infusion of brains, and they know in a central planning way how to run the entire society. Yet history shows they can't do it because everything around us. The reason that Venezuela is failing is because it's socialism and not capitalism. It's not people voluntarily, because of their own self-interest, cooperating with other people to produce the best products and services available at the cheapest price in a competitive atmosphere. That is the morality and the goodness of capitalism that the left just, for some reason, refuses to observe and acknowledge that exist every day in society. Because you look at it, everything that we have that we expect perfection of, from our cell phones to our computers to our sound systems that we have to the vehicles that we drive, are all produced because people voluntarily agree to do business with another person, and they sign contracts to do that, and they all do it because it's all in their own best personal self interest.
And we expect the best.
And we expect the best
not
out
with
of
our
system.
Computers specifically, but no, with no, most people's
right, exactly.
Computers,
right.
Yes. There are some exceptions.
And what do you get when people say, no, we as a government can provide all the services to you? You get Venezuela. And then people say, well, America wants to be socialist. No, we don't. Americans don't want to be socialist. We want free stuff. We're free stuffers. It's the free stuffness party. That's what we are. We want free stuff. We don't want the limitations that come, and we don't want the lack of choice that comes, and we don't want government reaching into our pockets. If you reach into that guy's pocket, that's fine to get his money, but not mine. They don't want you reaching into my pocket to get it. I don't want an intrusive government into my life. I just want as much free stuff as I can get. And I believe that I can get it, or I just won't even think about the consequences, as if we live a society that promises that. Because you know what you get when you live in a society and a government that promises that? You get Venezuela. That's what you get.
Right.
And that's what Ocasio-Cortez is promising you. The destruction of the United States of America to get you to a Venezuela.
It wasn't long ago they were applauding Venezuela.
No, they were. They all were. Michael Moore, where are you? You've been quiet lately.
Right.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open. Would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Coming up following the top of the hour, the jobs report that came in, where are we going there? They expected 180,000, 20,000
right.
Jobs. Now, look, we don't judge anything by a month. But as we have always stated on the show, if you've been a longtime listener on the show, that if after the tariffs went into place on China, the big tariffs on the 20th of September, we said expect to see a hit come the first or second quarter of 2019 on that. We already see that the GDP, the Atlanta Fed saying the GDP is only going to grow 0.3%. With inflation, that's roughly flat. That means zero growth. And so if that's the case and that ends up being accurate, a depressed job growth would fit perfectly in that scenario.
Right. Yep.
So I don't know. I mean, if you have less now, but even 100,000, if you see a tapering off in a very low first quarter, that could all fit.
Right. Yeah, it's something that, you know, that has to be considered, and you then consider everything that the administration has been putting out in terms of the positive move toward a deal with China. All the propaganda or releases have pointed in a positive direction, that they're getting something done, they're making progress, and they believe they'll have a deal done. Well, first of all, we always our motto is wait until it's done before you start singing the praises of it, whether it's a deal with North Korea or a trade deal with China. And then beyond that, we'll see actually what they do get done. If intellectual property rights or intellectual property issues with China are done and it is something measurable and enforceable by the U.S. or just the world, the World Trade Organization or any other entity, then that's a good thing. We'll see if that part gets done, and then beyond that, where we can start doing business again, especially with the farms in the Midwest.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, you and I, with the news going on and covering, as we do, the issues of the day. Not that we don't delve into other topics at times, but most of the time it's the issues of the day that we're delving into. That means we're mostly looking at probably 100 times more political blogs and political social media than we are other social media. I've got to tell you, though, I've got a few friends of mine that are sports talk show hosts, and there's more rage and anger, I swear to you, in sports social media than there is right now even in politics. I mean, it's unbelievable the rage that people have over sports.
Yeah, I would believe that. Because you're defending something, you know, if you're a fan and someone's going after your team or if ownership, I don't know. Let's say there's a team that was once referred to as America's team. And they had an owner. I mean, just to lay it doesn't really happen in real life, but just to make the point. And they said, and let's say there's an owner of said team who acts as a coach and general manager and does press conferences when none of the other owners are doing press conferences, I guess, unless they get caught at a bordello or something. You could see a number of the longtime fans there being upset, you know, with their own team, right, with the ownership of the team. So that happens quite a bit. Not that it would happen in, you know, real life that way, but just to make the extreme point, Jerry Jones. And in the other side of that is you're defending. Or you're defending your maybe your prediction for the week, right, the game. Then it didn't turn out that way. and people are calling you out. But yeah, I could see it. It's of course, it's very territorial. I've never been that way, though. I don't care who it is.
Oh, we since you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys, we did miss that topic.
Oh, did I mention the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, yeah. Since you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys, because I didn't even talk to you about this off the air. We've just been too busy.
Mm-hmm.
But about David Irving, the defensive lineman who quit because he wants to smoke pot.
Right.
Yeah. Was it on Instagram? It was on social media where he was like holding what looked like a joint and smoking a joint while he quit.
Right.
And that debate,
he's quitting the NFL.
That debate over the weekend was just mind-boggling on social media. It was just like, I'm just going through it laughing. He should be able to smoke if he wants to smoke. No, he should. Yes, he should. I'm like, wow.
No, I wondered that, you know, when he first said that and that came out, I saw Des Bryant was defending him saying, you know, because most people were saying he would rather than make millions in the NFL, he would rather go smoke pot. And Des Bryant came out and said, no, y'all have it wrong, and I'm paraphrasing, he would rather live than die. In other words, you know, the damage that you go through as a professional football player. I said, no, that's not what I took from it. Had he not been smoking a joint, then you could have that debate. But this all had to do with his suspension.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what it stemmed from. Sorry. That's where the seed was planted. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
That's what got everybody all smoked up. Lit up. Oh.
But I followed some of these people. I got into the business of being in sports talk radio. I mean, I was either their first boss or, you know, helped them get a job. And I'm reading some of their social media and the blistering attacks. I'm like, geez, our stuff's minor compared to this.
Well, that, yeah.
But the other one I had, and I told you about this, the other was even in social media, in music. I told you about the one NBC News story that was out over the weekend. And it was an opinion article, and it was, are the Clash still the only band that matters? And on social media, I mean, it was just the best thing ever. People were furious. Of course they are. The Clash is the only band that ever really mattered. And then somebody would put, no, you're not. No, they're not. Why aren't they? Yes, they are. The Clash is the only one. And all I can think of is, yeah, the world couldn't succeed without Rock the Casbah. I mean, that just... there was fury, Eric. I mean, there were people furious. And you and I, for our knowledge on music that occasionally we discuss on the show, and thank you for the compliments we get whenever we discuss it, we've always premised it with, look, whether it's Lady Gaga, who I personally, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter whether I like it. You can't argue music. People like what they like. Mm-hmm. You can have the most technically proficient guitarist, and you can go, wow, I really, really love it. And somebody says, yeah, but I just don't get into it. I like this tune over here that's got a good hook. Mm-hmm. Well, how can you debate what people like to listen to?
Yeah, it's preference.
It's preference, right. But the fury that people have over it, I find it amusing, that's all.
Well, because everybody, for a lot of it, it really is about that social statement for a lot of them. Their music needs to mean something.
The most important band.
Not really. It's for me, it's not that. You know, I mean, if you're expecting that, I guess from a musician, expect to be greatly disappointed. You know, if you expect them to go out and change the world, very few ever have any kind of significant impact. Much less change the world.
Yeah, exactly. When I saw that, and I knew what was going to happen when I saw the story from NBC News, and I saw it on social media, and I went, oh, this is going to be good.
Right.
This is where I know I'm going to be entertained.
Right.
I know that somebody, because, you know, of course, are the most important band in the world. And I mean, the fury, I'm not, and some of the sports stuff I saw over the weekend, along with that, people are just, I don't know what it is, but They're losing it.
Well, I mean,
so, over stupid stuff.
So now you could enter, if we enter that arena and we start talking about, I guess, social impact of bands over the years. Most people, I guess, who weren't fans would never know the nature of the songs of Black Sabbath. War Pigs, anti-war, pretty clear.
Yeah.
But Geezer Butler was an old school environmentalist. Ozzy, even when he went solo. Crazy Train. Read the words to Crazy Train. Don't play the song. Just read the words. It's about environmentalism. It's about a number of things, you know. We're going off the rails on a crazy train, and nobody cares about. There was a couple of other songs that he wrote about environmental issues. And if you read the lyrics and don't listen to the song,
and that's not what you think you're getting from those songs,
right?
That's not the message you think you're getting.
You know, for me, Black Sabbath was like going to a Bela Lugosi Dracula movie. You know what I mean? And that's what a lot of people took from it.
I can still remember in junior college driving down. We decided to skip class, and I really didn't want to go because I was paying for my college, but I figured I was in engineering, and he said, let's skip the class and go to the park and drink some beers.
Yeah.
I'll never forget Iron Man coming on. That was a moment in my life I remember.
Right.
I can't tell you what the song's about. All I can remember is the beginning of it. But you don't put them into that genre of environmentalist.
Yeah.
A Black Sabbath.
Right.
Yeah, so... Or
Ozzy. You know, basically with Crazy Train, it's time to learn how to love and forget how to hate. What you see on stage, though, is, of course.
Well, I always think
something
of,
different.
I always think because you'll hear people talking about John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
And Imagine, for example.
Right.
I mean, that was the song that changed. And you and I have gone through the lyrics of it, as many other conservatives did, and say, this lyrics are stupid.
Hmm.
The lyrics to Imagine, when you actually break them down, are stupid. We've ticked people off when we said it, but the fact is that when you view it, I mean, they're to us, they're dumb.
Right.
They weren't prolific lyrics. The song made them sound like they were, but when you put it all together, it's like, what would the world actually be like that? It'd be chaos. It'll be chaos like that. Well, he's making it sound like it's going to be great. Everybody's taking the message. The world would be great if it was like this way.
Mm-hmm.
If we imagined it that way. And we said, no, it'd be a nightmare.
Right.
So you can take out of a song whatever, you know, you want to take out of it. It's just the fury that people have. I just find really interesting when it comes to music, sports, whatever. The fury on social media that really at times beats what I see in politics. And it's just because I don't delve into there too often that I don't notice it. And this weekend, when I happened to go to it, I was like, wow, it's really just, it's mind-boggling how furious. I mean, people are losing it about sports. It's a game. And they're losing it about their opinions on music. It's music. People are going to like what they like. So, that's all.
Well, I don't know, we really get protective or defensive. It's almost territorial like sports is. It was never that way for me for music.
No, it wasn't, because I like so much. I like so much out there from so many different genres, which is why I love when we were brought up, when we were just exposed, I think, than many young people are today in society, to so many different forms of music. That was actually, I think, so beneficial. And maybe there are young people, if they're exposed to the, you know, again, online, maybe they are. But for us, having the popular culture that was thrown out by radio that played a lot more, even the top 40 stations played a lot more different versions or genres of music that were the most popular back then, which just exposed us to more that I think, you know, to me, we were blessed, and therefore we didn't judge music as much. I've often said it. What was it? When my old girlfriend dragged me, you know, to Luther Vandross, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to, he's in that genre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love music. I don't want to. One of the best shows I ever saw.
Right.
And you talked about, you know, when you saw, because we were talking about Michael Jackson last week,
right,
and you saw the one tour, And even though it's not your favorite music, you went, whoa, how fantastic.
Yeah, because I was a DJ, and we, you know, took some winners and flew to Kansas City for the second night of the Bad Show, and or the Bad Tour. And I'll never forget the guitarist, Jennifer Batten. And she's an incredible musician. Yep. Incredible.
Yep.
And that's what I saw. I saw this massive, massive production that was well rehearsed, and I thought to myself, wow, I guess I'd never put that kind of thought into it.
I remember I had to go because it was a radio station promotion. Had to go see the Thompson Twins.
Right.
I was like, oh, I don't want to go. I just don't want to go. I know I got to play it. And they were fantastic.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. It's, you know, and so I still didn't buy any of their records, which they actually had records at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Did we get to? No, we weren't at CDs yet, even then, because that was CDs, what, 88, 89?
Yeah, yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah,
yeah. Came out. But I'll never forget. And Berlin. And they were actually really good, too.
Right.
And I'll never forget because they had to drag me there. It's like, I don't want to go. You're the morning show guy. You have to go.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you're promoting. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's my job. Oh, I got to go. And it was really good.
Yeah, that was the one thing I loved about the Eagles. I haven't seen the new lineup with Vince Gill. But seeing them a handful of times when Glenn Frey was still alive, they were clearly well rehearsed. And it wasn't going to be, you know, a show with dancing or anything else. It was about the music. But the music had to be, the way they played it was exactly the way that you hear it in its original recording most often. I think they did an acoustic version of this or that along the way, but, they executed those songs perfectly because they believe that's what the fan expects. Don't do a different version of
it. You know, I didn't know Skinner did the same thing.
Yeah, right.
I said the thing that was amazing about Skinner, maybe not today, but when Ronnie Van Zant was there, they said every single note. You thought because they would go into these wild versions, they said, no, every single song was the same.
Mm-hmm.
Every single show that they ever played, every note was the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot who their manager was. Oh, I can't think of the name of it. The famous producer who said it blew him away. He said he couldn't believe it. He said every single show, they had it down. They come in the studio. It was done exactly right every single time. And you just didn't think of, you know, thinking Leonard Skinner, the Southern Rock Band, yee-haw, party guys. It's like, no, the most disciplined band you ever want to see.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
But there you go. But I had to mention about the social media thing because it got to me over this weekend. And I just don't pay a lot of attention to sports, social media, and music social media. But when I saw it over the weekend, I went, wow, they get more insane than political social media at times.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
Yeah, very defensive and territorial in nature.
Very tribal.
Yeah, sure.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. But the best thing I saw on social media over the weekend was Molly Hemingway from TheFederalist.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Fox News contributor.
Right.
And she posted an Instagram post from the actress Deborah Messing.
Right.
And Molly wrote, following an internal struggle session, Deborah Messing apologizes profusely to men who identify as women for promoting the idea that women have vaginas. I am so, so sorry. Thank you for righting my wrong. This was all part of International Women's Day. And the actual Instagram post was, all I can say is, remember we had the plastic model cars? These look like either they're clay or plastic, all model vaginas.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12 different ones. They could be pottery, but they're basically vaginas is what they are.
Right.
And she writes, Women's Day, powerful, beautiful, and sweet. I want to apologize to my trans sisters. This photo was supposed to be light and sassy. The first thing I thought when I saw this photo was, wow, how wonderful. Each one is unique in color, shape, and size. The porn industry has been perpetuating this myth of what a beautiful vagina looks like, and as a result, there are women who feel shame or insecure about theirs. I love that this picture said every single one is beautiful, unique, and that's powerful. I did not think, however, that There are innumerable beautiful, unique, and powerful women who don't have a vagina. And I should have. And for that, I am so sorry. Thank you for righting my wrong. Thought Molly Hemingway and some of the responses to that afterwards were just going, they probably were just losing it laughing. This is where we are right now.
Well,
this is the insanity of where we are right now as a nation.
Well, and that's it. Is that, first of all, thank you for righting my wrong. Oops, yeah. I got caught. I need to back up a little bit. I need to apologize. I don't want to live in that. I don't want to live in that universe. No. I live in the real world. Sorry. Here's your forecast.
Daylight saving time is here, a sure sign winter is on the wane. Also in Dallas, Texas, the average date of the last freeze is March 12th. But you look at Chicago, the average date of the last freeze there, April 25th. Between those two points, a wide area of the country. So we've got a ways to go, but we're just over a week away from the March equinox. The 20th of the month, next Wednesday, the first day of spring. Areas for showers today include central Texas and southern Oklahoma. Showers are possible along the Gulf states from New Orleans today, up into just south of Atlanta and on into the Carolinas, then offshore. A good portion of the mid-Atlantic and Midwest will be clear. After some heavy snowfall over the weekend in the northern plains, things at least will be sunny there, as well as clear skies for the Pacific Northwest. Heavy rain for the desert southwest beginning tomorrow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
They're right 100% of the time. Just ask them. Red Eye Radio.
Oh, yeah.
And he's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED EYE. We're just going through story after story after story because there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
This story, I'm reading it from thehill.com. I just thought it was interesting, and it leads us to another thing that we haven't that we've wanted to talk about and haven't got a chance to talk about it. Not that it's that important, but I think it's just an observation. Conservative commentator Michelle Malkin on Saturday refused to apologize for criticizing the ghost of the late John McCain last week at the Conservative Political Action Conference. I've always had in my heart in the place of the grassroots conservative movement, not the Republican Party and the elites, Malkin said on Fox News, adding that people would understand why the audience was cheering if they watched her full speech at CPAC. Malkin argued that big business Republicans were selling out the American public before accusing the media of trying to turn her comments into a stupid catfight rather than focusing on immigration issues. The fact that the ghost of John McCain and all the other big business, Chamber of Commerce-type Republicans have been selling out the American people, that's where the Republican Party needs to reconnect. They simply can't rely on the Democratic Party falling apart. Here's what she said, all right? This is the part that people apparently got upset about, including the McCains. Cindy McCain, John McCain's widow, Meghan McCain responded to her. But she said, sanctuary cities have metastasized and both parties are to blame, Malkin said. And yes, I'm looking at you, retired Speaker Paul Ryan. And yes, I'm looking at you, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And yes, I'm looking at you, Bush family. And yes, I'm looking at you, the ghost of John McCain, Malkin said as she looked and pointed a finger upward. The remarks prompted a wave of applause from the crowd. I guess the point that you and I have, you know, immediately both at the same time thought of, and it's interesting because I thought about it, and when you and I were just talking about it now, you said the exact same thing without me telling you how I thought, is that you can say amnesty, but you can't say sanctuary cities. Sanctuary right. cities are sanctuary cities are solely the if you're looking to criticize somebody, are the mayors and city councils of cities that decide to be sanctuary cities and states, the state representatives that decide to be sanctuary states. Now, you can make the case that Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, and McCain with McCain-Kennedy attempted to have amnesty, but amnesty is being talked today by a ton of different politicians, including Trump.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The idea that, okay, we'll bargain amnesty. We may bargain amnesty or certain type of amnesty for something, down the road. That's talked about. But sanctuary cities are not. But it took us beyond that. And you and I started talking about, for example, by the way, did you see that Trump finally took off at Ann Coulter over the weekend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finally. But I look at it and maybe not so much Malkin or I know that they try to say things that they know will get them noticed,
mm-hmm.
that will get them read.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Ann Coulter before and her wanting to sell books, or the point of we always thought having unreasonable expectations of Trump to begin with and selling them as reasonable. And as we said, we knew he was never going to reach it. We knew he was never going to get a 2,000-mile wall built with the Mexicans paying for it. She promoted it as if it was reasonable and he could do it. And then when he didn't do it, he had betrayed the country and betrayed the Republican Party and everybody else. You and I have talked about the never-Trumpers before that exist out there, whether it's a Bill Kristol, whether it's at times, George Will, mm-hmm. even though we don't hear as much from George Will, and we hope he's all right, but we haven't heard him. A lot, but the fury that you could tell that he had. And I asked you this question last week off the air because I know we're not like that, but do you get the feeling at times that some of these people believe that they own a certain little portion, a little piece of turf of the conservative movement, and they can't let it go?
Yeah,
you ever get that? I mean, I asked you that, you sort of thought the same thing.
Well, for me, it's always about defending the ideas. The ideas are not that I believe in are not the ideas that come and go. They're not new ideas. They're tried and true.
Right. I didn't come up with them. I don't own them.
I don't have anything to protect in terms of those ideas. They're not mine. But I believe they are sound, and I believe they are solid, and I love talking about the ideas that work. And then beyond that, promoting those ideas to be implemented as policy. And that's the problem that I have with some of these, and they seem to be media-driven, but a CPAC seems to be more and more this competition to prove, amongst the people that appear, that I'm more conservative than other people here. I'm more conservative than, the person that's in the White House. I'm more conservative than, and for me, it's never been a competition. I'm not out to prove that I belong anywhere in those ideas. I'm there to promote the ideas. If I were there, I would be there to promote the ideas that are tried and true. If you listen to the recordings of Ronald Reagan, or if you listen to many of the great discussions, the economic discussions of Milton Friedman, I never put Milton Friedman on the pedestal. I rewarded his work by paying attention to it, by giving it a lot of attention and learning from it.
And it wasn't
about him. Right. It was about those ideas.
And I don't think he ever took ownership of the ideas.
No.
I mean, he would look back and say, he would go back all the way to Adam Smith and talk about Adam Smith observing what capitalism actually was.
And he was great at setting setting up a scenario so that you could easily understand it. That part is his work.
Right.
Him being able to explain those ideas simply and a very comfortable tone and I think very civil setting is great. Not that there is it is quite the opposite at CPAC, because it's not. The point being is that while I've got tremendous concerns with people like, in fact, Paul Ryan. We talked about it when he was in office. when he became Speaker, something changed. After he was brought on board the Mitt Romney campaign in 2012 to bring some kind of conservative street cred to the ticket, things changed when he became the Speaker.
Right.
Well, he's gone. I don't need to call people out. We've talked about it. The Republican Party is definitely moving further left. I can make that point, I guess, without verbally trolling anyone. I don't need to, unless they're in office right now and they're doing something I disagree with. If they're a public servant right now and they have great influence over the party and the movement of the party, then that's always going to be a concern. But I don't feel it necessary to go out and prove that I'm more conservative than the next person.
Well,
and I don't need to call someone out, especially if they're no longer here.
With Malkin's comment, this is, you know, and look, I think she's written some great things.
Mm-hmm.
But when she said sanctuary cities have metastasized and both parties are to blame, number one, if she would have said amnesty, she would have been absolutely correct on the point. But taking it one step further to sanctuary cities, which is factually incorrect,
right,
in order to get that extra cheer that, all right, I'm going after these guys for something even more than amnesty, sanctuary cities. Well, they're not to blame for that.
No.
Amnesty, yes, but amnesty is not sanctuary cities. But to do it to get the cheer and in essence, oomph, I'm more of a critic than them, to them, than anybody else has been, because I've accused them of sanctuary cities, and therefore that ups my street conservative cred.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I just that's where I thought about, and it really goes back to, for example, somebody like Bill Kristol, who I look at there. He really seems, and there's others, there's others out there. I may even say David Brooks, whatever, that have been so vicious against Trump that even the good conservative stuff they tend to ignore. It's almost as if they're trying to protect, or they believe that this is that there's a Bill Kristol conservatism or a Bill Kristol. Where you and I've always looked at it and said, look, these are conservative ideas. You either follow them or not. Here are the libertarian ideas. Here are the conservative ideas. Here are the free market ideas. I've never felt any ownership of them. Neither have you. And I find that it's almost people like trying to protect their own little turf. And
right.
I find that interesting. And I've noticed that over the last couple of years with a number of conservatives out there, as if the goal is to protect my turf. And that's just, to me, I'm not sure in their minds what they're attempting to accomplish.
Well, I think when you're in the arena of ideas professionally, that there likely is among them this attitude that you have to protect those ideas as if you own them. It's one thing to defend the ideas, but I think it's disingenuous to take ownership of those ideas. And I mean the fundamental principles. The writings and how you explain the ideas, how you discuss the ideas, is your work. That is something that you can claim. That's the ownership that clearly falls in your corner. But I think many of them compete to have some ownership of those ideas. And I don't see the need to do that. I think, by the way, I think a lot of that, not always, but not all of it, but I think some of it, a lot of it is the result of social media and what you have to do in order, what they believe you have to do to stay relevant. It wouldn't matter if I had, 50 million followers or five. If we're going to discuss the ideas, first of all, social media doesn't even give you the proper arena in which to do that. I really think that talk radio, or if you have a place where you can write, whether it's a blog or the Weekly Standard or wherever it might be, then you have a greater ability to expand on those ideas, and you don't have to worry about the number of characters. You don't have to worry about the trolls. Becomes something, I think, very different.
And a lot of it, for example, and I say protecting turf, it's almost protecting that you're protecting a turf of I dislike this person and what this person has done, and it moves you away from arguing mm-hmm. the actual issues. And it's like, Bill Kristol, and there's a few other Never Trumpers out there that obviously on issue, Jennifer Rubin, for example, she's one of them who just has lost it completely with the Washington Post. I mean, she's just so anti-Trump. She's a liberal. I mean, she went from somebody who you could say was a moderate conservative to an absolute liberal because of her hatred. And it's almost as if she fights to the point of absurdity to protect a certain portion of her turf, of her anti-Trump turf. Right. And that's what I've noticed out there. And I've noticed the same thing with Bill Kristol. I'm wondering whether George Will hasn't been out there saying a lot, but I just know at times when he's written it, it seems like he's so angry at Trump. Well, wait a minute. I mean, people are going to come into the movement and out of the movement that may be, you know, partly. Look, Trump is more conservative than I thought he was going to be.
In terms of what he's gotten done.
It is. But I never expected if Trump would become president that he would automatically be a conservative across the board. To think that is unrealistic. And so if you're at that point and then therefore anything that he says you despise, to me, what are you attempting to protect? I don't understand it. And I thought the same with Malkin. It seems like it's the people that you're attacking instead of the ideas, to the point where you take it too far. And you actually get into untruths by saying sanctuary cities instead of amnesty. If it was amnesty, she would have had a point.
Sure, and you could say, look, you know, with amnesty, it is the same. The same idea of rewarding illegal behavior, and I could agree with you. But saying that they were responsible for it is not accurate.
It's just not accurate. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye, excuse me, Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Sorry.
You okay?
Yes. I mean, the cold is over, so feeling all right.
Yeah.
More than half of Californians say they plan to leave as the state leads the U.S. in out-migration. According to the survey, 53% of all people of California, 63% of millennials, 76% of residents in the Bay Area say they are seriously considering leaving the state. Well, the majority of you vote Democrat.
Right. Why don't you just vote for different
63% policy? Of millennials, the majority of millennials vote Democrat.
The cost of living isn't that high because your state is so awesome. It's because you keep voting for more government policy, which is very costly. You can change that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.